Welcome back to the Meet St. Louis podcast, brought to you by Mattress Direct, your local sleep specialist. Each week, we take you behind the scenes of your favorite restaurants, breweries, and small businesses. I'm your host, Alexa Zotos with KMOV. The beloved record store Vintage Vinyl started as a booth in the Soulard Farmers Market. For decades, it served as a hub for St. Louis music culture, and it's been named one of the best record stores in the entire country. We sat down amidst the records and the CDs to talk with owner Tom Ray about the legacy of the store in the Del Mar Loop. Tom has hundreds of stories to share, and we dive into some of the classics. The early days of the store, some of the highlights of musicians who've shopped the aisles, and what Tom thinks is the future of music amidst a world of streaming services. A big thanks to one of our listeners who requested this interview. So let's meet Tom.
Get the best price on brand name mattresses at Mattress Direct. You'll get the guaranteed lowest price, and the non-commissioned sleep specialists will make sure you get the right mattress for the way you get to sleep. You'll sleep better knowing you got the best price on the right mattress when you shop local at St. Louis Mattress Direct.
Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We're always having fun here on the Del Mar Loop, because the Del Mar Loop is the street that sells the beat.
For those that, you know, maybe don't know the history here at Vintage Vinyl, give us a little backstory. Give us a little history.
Well, in 1979, I had been working in the music business in Manhattan for a number of years. My business partner at the time and I met in St. Louis, and we opened up a small record store at Soulard Market on Saturdays in 1979. About 9 months later, we opened up our first store here on Del Mar, and we've been here for 43 years.
I don't even know if you can quantify the biggest changes over those last four decades.
It's the changing same. Things change, but so often it's deja vu all over again.
Mm. In what way?
One of my favorite examples is that the angry, hip-hop customer of mine in 1987. Now he's middle-aged. He comes into the store with his kids and says in front of them to me, "Now, you know, this rap music is just not as good as..." And, you know, I always say, you know, to that old customer, "You know, you sound like your parent." So, you know, there's music that is what I call songs of innocence. Mm. And then there's music that's songs of experience. Mm. And whether it's rock music or hip-hop or pop music, the most popular music of any era is the one that, you know, resonates the strongest with that generation.
Mm-hmm. You, I imagine, have gotten to see multiple generations of music lovers come through those doors over the years. What is that like to know that you've helped shape the musical interest of so many St. Louisans and beyond?
It beats middle management and banking.
Yeah, I would bet.
No, it's very fulfilling. Sometimes I feel like I was given the blessing of being like the one pharmacist in a small town that everybody's gotten their needed medication from.
Walk me back to the beginning. Describe the store as it was then.
750 square feet. 140, I believe, code violations. There was a hole in the ceiling large enough to stuff a dead Shetland pony. And it was at 6354, right by the Tivoli building.
Okay.
And we just always stayed on Del Mar because of two reasons. Well, really three reasons. We were right down the street from a college, university. It was a place where people actually walked in St. Louis, never a given. And then the rarest thing of all, a racial neutral zone.
Mm.
And that has made a difference in your guys' success?
I always wanted to have a store for intelligent music lovers. A store that celebrated not only American music culture, but St. Louis music culture. And that meant making a bond and being a part of the St. Louis black community.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen that change, if you have, over your decades here in the Loop? You know, have you... I know that we talk about sort of music as sort of that connector. Do you think that remains true?
Oh, very much so. And as I tell new employees that come in, there's a lot of things on this planet that divide people. Religion, music, economics, politics, race. And one of the very few things that will bring different kinds of people together is their shared love and appreciation of music. I remember a great Nigerian artist named Sunny Ade came here, played at the Duck Room, and when I got in line to go see him, standing in front of me was one of my customers who was a Nigerian, and seeing that I was here, he got a big grin on his face and said, "Now you will see the only time Nigerians will not be arguing with each other." So, you know, music's the healing force.
We were just talking before we started the interview about the predictions of the death of vinyl, the death of CD, the death of cassette. I imagine you've heard those predictions over and over for years.
Well, let's be honest. Worldwide, the vast majority of what you could call music consumption commercially is now done on streaming platforms, mm-hmm. which leaves a place such as my store and other independent record stores in what I call a position of being in a enviable niche. Mm. I think there will always be people that want to have that physical connection to music. And also, if you go to any city in the world and you want to make a connection to that city's musical community and musical culture, quickest way to do it is go to that community record store in that city, because that's the that's the place everybody comes to, mm-hmm. and everybody in that store working probably knows exactly who, what, and where is going on in that town. In fact, their day job is working in a record store, but they're going to be playing that night somewhere.
Right. Can you walk me back to when streaming really took off and kind of what that meant for you guys? Were there moments, are there still moments that you feared for the future of your store?
Well, nothing stays the same. And sometimes I knew that vintage vinyl would continue to exist, and there were other times that I felt like it was the year 1912, and I owned the best buggy whip store in the Midwest. But, you know, all you can do is watch and see. And if you're in business for yourself, what you've sort of got to do is be a navigator. Mm. I mean, I have an incredible staff here. They always make me look good. So the one job I really have to do, other than podcasts, is sort of trying to look into the future and figure a way to, you know, keep the ship going forward.
What do you think has made Vintage Vinyl unique in that you guys have remained viable, remained successful, when other independent record stores have had to close their doors over the years?
Well, and again, record stores that never stopped carrying vinyl, they're not the ones that went out of business. It's all those mall stores. It's all those chain stores that went strictly to CD, mm-hmm. and whose clientele was pretty much just wanting to buy the flavor of the week. I always knew that vintage vinyl could not exist if we were going to try to compete with a big box retailer who uses the top 10 items 52 weeks out of the year as a lost leader. You know, we're trying to serve the rest of the pie.
That makes sense. I mean, if we think about, as you mentioned, those mall stores gone, you know, the bookstores that started carrying CDs, some vinyl, most of those are gone. But you guys are still standing strong.
And it's good because so many of us here would be the sort of people that won't be given a job otherwise.
Why do you say that?
Just experience. And the fact that the other side of that coin is that we've never had a problem hanging on to our employees. We've never had an employee shortage. I've had employees who retired after 30 years of working here. And that kind of continuity helps. And I think our customers know that when they come in here, they're not going to get a hard sell. But if there's something they're looking for, then they can depend on us to be able to help them find it. You know, even if it just comes down to, oh, I heard a song on the radio yesterday. I don't know who it was by. Well, you know what station it was on? No, I don't know. But it had these lyrics. Chances are there's somebody on the staff will go, oh, yeah, that's that.
Yeah, talk to me about that knowledge that you get from, you know, a store of this legacy. You know, is there a test that employees have to take? A musical test when they apply? How does that work?
Well, we look for experience, and yeah, we'll ask questions. You know, the perennial question here, of course, because it just is indicative of who that individual is. We always want to ask, what was the last record you bought? What was the first record you bought?
For you, what are those answers?
My first record, which my mother bought me in Charleston, South Carolina, back in about 1966, was a thing called Atlantic Solid Gold Soul Volume 2. Mm. And my second album was James Brown Soul Brother Number 1.
And so, what about your most recent record? Or do you have to buy them because you just get to listen to them here?
No. Actually, my most recent record that I bought was what they call a mashup, which to say is a remix of a well-known record, and it happened to be Marvin Gaye meets Mos Def.
Okay.
I use the term, use his name Mos Def. He goes by a different name, but basically it's Mos Def meets Marvin Gaye.
Okay.
I wanted to hear what he had to say.
And did you like it?
You know, I'd give it a 6. It had a good beat. You could dance to it.
How much are you sort of sampling, listening to music that maybe you don't love because you need to know what's out there, what people are listening to, what people are seeking out?
Well, for all music, personally, my criteria is this. If I hear a piece of music, do I want to hear it again? And if I want to hear it again and again, I know I like it. Mm. I was just interviewing yesterday a St. Louis artist named Emily Wallace, who's a wonderful singer, who did a song called South St. Louis, basically saying, I just want to live in South, you know, South City. And the first time I heard it, I just loved it. I mean, I listened to it 5 times. About the 5th time, you know, water was coming to my eye.
Aww.
So that's one part. The rest of it is, yeah, a lot of times I have a kind of a clinical attitude about hearing music. I'll go, oh, okay, that's coming out of this. Okay, well, this is going to be the audience for that. Oh, yeah, no instruments on this at all. This is all digital. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm doing that. So I'd say probably 98% of new music I hear, I may like it, I may dislike it, I may respect it, I may think it's well done, but I'm not necessarily going to want to hear it again.
Interesting. Do you, you mentioned sort of a local musician that you were talking to. You have a radio show, yes?
Soul Selector on 88.1 KDHX.
Okay, tune in, people. What do you think the St. Louis music scene, how it's moving forward into the future? We've always had an incredible music scene here. Where do you see it going?
Let's begin with the fact that St. Louis has more of a music scene than many of the states in the U.S. Mm. Let's begin with the fact that the only place in the world, the possible exception of some corner in Canada, that when you say the term St. Louis blues, they don't think it's a game played on ice. When I travel outside of St. Louis or even go overseas, and especially in music circles, oh, you're from St. Louis. Oh, did you ever see? And then they start naming people. Oh, you're from St. Louis. That's where Miles Davis is from. So that's the world's image of our city. Mm. Our problem in St. Louis is that the corporate powers and the political powers haven't figured out how to monetize the musical heritage of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. You can see it in Nashville, obviously. You can see it in New Orleans. You can see it in Memphis. You can see it in Chicago. St. Louis suffers from what I call cultural amnesia, which is a polite way to put it.
And, you know, and it is one of those things where we are unique, and that if you want to see local live music here in St. Louis, you can find it.
Hmm. You know, and it gives me great pleasure. You know, we've kind of become a destination in the summer for tourists, and I'll go out and I'll see, say, somebody from Europe or South America or Asia with their friends grinning, getting their selfie in front of the Chuck Berry mural that's on the side of our building. So I'm waiting for there to be a political class in St. Louis, pigmentation or party notwithstanding, that figures out this is what we've got to offer to the world. Hasn't happened yet. I one time, probably about a dozen or so years ago, somebody from the St. Louis Convention Center called and said, you know, we have visitors coming to St. Louis and they're asking about, they want to see St. Louis blues. Do you know of any places in St. Louis where they could see this kind of music? And I'm going, are you from St. Louis? You know, where are you from? It's funny. I mean, I know every 5-year-old in Vienna knows who Mozart is.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that needs to be sort of embedded more into our education here as locals. You mentioned Carolinas. Is that where you're from?
My mother's family is from Duval County, Florida, which is northeast Florida, and my father's family is from Tifton, Georgia, and of course, northeast Florida is just an extension of Georgia.
Okay.
And I was fortunate to grow up hearing, I could listen to Top 40 radio, and one cut would be the Beatles, but then the next cut would be a Southern blues artist like Slim Harpo. Mm-hmm. And then the next cut would be some local, some Florida band that had a hit on the charts, and then it might be James Brown. So now stations are so predicated.
Well, you get an hour essentially looped.
Well, yeah, you exactly. And it's because program directors want to have as few a number of songs on their playlist as possible.
Why?
Because their attitude is the average listener is only going to listen 15 minutes, and they want to make sure they hear something they want to hear.
I want to talk about sort of the impact that the local St. Louis music lover has had on your store, buying records, buying CDs. How have they changed? You know, what have you seen in terms of change, the importance of buying local, sort of almost that rejection of streaming, that rejection of the big box stores and wanting to come shop local?
Well, it's like we once said on a local radio station advertising, buying your music online is sort of like phone sex.
Okay.
But this, you know, a place such as Vintage Vinyl or any of the other excellent independent stores that I visit around the U.S., you just walk in and you just know this is a nerve sitter.
Mm.
This is a communal place. This is where not only people in that community come to, but it's where a visiting artist who's got 3 hours before he goes on stage and then gets on the bus to go to the next city.
Mm-hmm. You might find them here.
They're going to come here. More than once, more than twice, more than several dozen times, I'll be at my desk at work and somebody go, oh, so-and-so, and so-and-so being somebody playing in town, is downstairs shopping. And
does that still excite you? Are there any musicians that pop in that will have you hurrying out of your desk to get down here?
Sometimes. The Beastie Boys came in one day, and they impressed me immediately for two reasons. One, they were a hip-hop group that didn't have this obnoxious entourage of hangers-on.
Mm.
And two, they were shopping in the jazz section.
Hmm.
And, you know, no attitude. They, you know, were just wanting to go through the racks. I'd say a real high point was having Mumford & Sons do a show here in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to do it outside because we figured, oh, huge crowd. And they were, no, we want to do it in the store. And it finally hit me. These guys are playing in 70,000-seat rooms all over the world.
Right.
They want to be in an intimate setting. And, you know, it was sweeter than sweet.
Are there musicians that you have gotten to see that sort of rise? That, you know, maybe they come in, they're playing a small venue in St. Louis, maybe they're here, and now you're seeing them sell out Enterprise, things like that.
St. Louis's own Angel Olsen. Pokey LaFarge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's been that more than once, and it's very gratifying to see that happen. I know Nelly, as a young man, would shop our store. It's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is just like a logistical question. What's the biggest section, the genre here in your store?
Rock,
okay.
Which, you know, encompasses a lot of different styles. I mean, when you say rock music, you can mean anything from Neil Young to Pink Floyd to Dan Fogelberg or Iggy Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of anything Dan Fogelberg and Iggy Pop have in common other than the fact that they were both born in the Midwest.
Is there an album or an artist that you've sold the most of?
Well, some of our biggest sales have been with St. Louis artists.
Mm.
In their day, The Urge.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be on the phone with The Urge at one point saying, well, I really need 50 copies of the new, you can only get me 25? Well, can you bring those? Or a band called the Rum Drum Ramblers, which in 2008 was our best-selling CD.
Wow.
Playing music that I would, when I first heard them, I said, this is what I would expect to hear if I was in a tavern in St. Louis in 1934, when you could send your kid down the street to the tavern and they could bring you back a bucket of beer. So it was kind of good-timey, ragtime music.
Okay.
And this was being made at the time by, you know, people in their 20s.
Does that surprise you that the local acts are sort of those bestsellers for you, or does that make sense as this local music shop?
Well, one of my theories about music is that music so often comes, almost entirely always comes from places where there is a disparity of income that is stressful, that is maybe dangerous or urban. And the exact opposite is true. Colorado is a beautiful state. Colorado, though, has never produced a game-changing musician. East St. Louis, better believe it.
Interesting.
So I'm reminded of something that a great St. Louis blues artist, Henry Townsend, once said. And Henry, who died at the age of 96, on the way to headlining a blues festival.
What?
Where they were going to give him an award for being the only living person to record for the label that put out blues in the 20s and 30s called Paramount. This European journalist was interviewing him, and she knew a lot about St. Louis music, and she was just gushing and said, "Why do you think St. Louis had so many incredible musicians, Mr. Townsend?" And, you know, he's in his 80s then and sharp as a bell. And he kind of looked, kind of half grinned and went, "Well, I believe it was because it was a relief from the pressure."
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
So.
And, you know, when music is one of those things where someone might, you know, if we're talking about that economic, that you might spend those last dollars of your allowance, those last dollars of your paycheck to get that, you know, maybe not as much now where I put these in quotations that people think they can get music for free, but you know, if you want to hold that physical album in your hand, if you want to touch that music, you might spend your last few bucks on it.
Absolutely. And I often remember the example of, and this is something I've done more than once, but I remember somebody that came in during a period of pretty bad social unrest in the United States, and I could tell this customer of mine was tense. And he comes in, and you know, he's got that sort of half mad look in his eyes. And after he being about 10 minutes, he comes over and goes, "I just had to come in here and cool down." And I remember handing him a CD because I was cleaning a bunch of them, and I said, "Look, I want you to take this home. I want you to listen to this twice before you go to bed tonight. You can call me in the morning if it's not better."
Going back to that idea of that small town pharmacist.
Right, right. And, you know, I tell people that come into work here, one of the things we're doing is handing out prescriptions for social sanity.
We are heading into the holiday season where people use a little bit of that social sanity. How vital is it for the success here, as well as so many of our local businesses along the Del Mar Loop, for people to really get out, shop local, and put their money back into their community?
I want, at this point, to repeat something that should be said over and over again. When you shop a local business, and I don't care what kind of business it is, but when you shop a local business, the money you're spending and that other customers are spending, that stays in our community far longer than if you go to some big box corporate retailer who swipes your card and that money immediately goes to their lockbox out of state. That money doesn't stay in the community. Mm-hmm. Businesses, local businesses create what is called a multiplier effect in that cash flow. So one of the ways to support your community is to buy locally.
Make sure we have local record stores for years to come.
Make sure we have local everything as much as possible.
want to wish you all a happy holidays from the Meet St. Louis podcast. Remember, as you're doing your holiday shopping, to shop small and shop local, just like Tom says in this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll meet you back here next week.